Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Gaizka Mendieta, and you listen to La Liga Lowdown.
Hi, I'm Luis García, and you're listening to La Liga Lowdown.
Hi, I'm Carlos Soler, and this is La Liga Lowdown.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Garrido. Welcome along to this La Liga Lowdown mini-pod with Reyes Stakhanov and a broadcast on SiriusXM FC 157 in North America. And of course, we've been on an international break, ultimately a bit of a frustrating one for the Spain national team. We will focus on La Roja in part one of this podcast. In part two, though, we'll also speak about La Rojita, that is the under-21s, the Women's Clásico, which happened over the weekend, and the return of La Liga itself with one big matchup at the Wanda taking centre stage. And two of the La Liga Lowdown squad are joining me for the next half hour or so. So it's hello to Paco Bolit in Valencia.
Hi, David. Hi, La Liga Lowdown fans.
And also hi to Roman Darquer in Barcelona. How are you doing, Roman?
Hi there, David. Ready to talk about football?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's start off then and dive straight into, admittedly, that defeat in Zagreb at the Maximir Stadium, a game which really ebbed and flowed, especially in the second half until the final whistle blew. Croatia 3, Spain 2, the final score. And that really blew League A Group 4 of the UEFA Nations League wide open. Let's start off with just a brief comment on the starting 11 chosen by Luis Enrique for this key game. So David De Gea was in goal, Sergio Ramos, Inigo Martinez, Jordi Alba with a back four, Saúl, Sergio Busquets and Dani Ceballos in midfield, and then the front three, Rodrigo, Iago Aspas and Isco. Román de Arquer, to you first. Any surprises there for you?
Well, the strange thing is when there aren't surprises with Luis Enrique. But in this case, I think he didn't take too many risks. Maybe Ceballos was a bit of a surprise because he isn't playing as much now with Solari in Madrid. So maybe we would expect Asensio to play instead of him. Or he could have played with two contention midfielders like Rodri and Busquets, you know, to protect against the Croatian attack. But I think it was probably the smartest lineup to choose against the team. I think they were the most confident players and from the bigger clubs mainly. So I think it was the right choice.
Okay, let's sort of go from back to front, if you like, and let's start off with the goalkeeper. Now, David De Gea did make an important save in the first 6 minutes of this game. He sort of diverted a shot from Ivan Perisic onto the post. Nice, smart save down to his right. But he did end up conceding three goals, and he has been one of the focuses for the reaction after this game. What did you make of David De Gea's performance, Paco?
Well, I don't really think it's fair blaming De Gea for all Spain's problems, especially as the defense was poor overall once again. But, and this is a big but, poor De Gea can't really catch a break with the national team. Lately, he isn't up to par when compared to previous keepers or even his previous form with the national side. And I don't really know how to explain his plunge in performance when compared, for example, to his usual Manchester United self. In fact, I think playing Kepa against Bosnia later was a sly message from Luis Enrique. He still trusts De Gea, but the keeper shouldn't get too comfortable as Kepa is a true, tangible alternative to his position.
You're right about the Manchester United form. I mean, he's been pretty peerless. And also, actually, it seemed like he turned a corner after the World Cup and those first games in the Nations League, especially that game against England at Wembley when Spain played quite so well, because he was crucial in that game. He made some vital saves, this sort of duel that he had with Marcus Rashford, his Manchester United teammate, and he came out on top pretty much in that one. But you're right to mention the defensive weaknesses, Paco. I mean, they were poor, weren't they, Spain? They gave away the ball for the first goal, and then Tin Yedvai was completely unmarked for the second at the far post, beating De Gea. Listen, Roman, what do you put this down to? Because it seems like this is sort of repeat offenders that Spain are just making these mistakes time and time again.
Yeah, it's really hard to say why this is happening. There is a very clear parallel, we could say, because in the league, in the Spanish league, Barca have conceded 18 goals and Madrid have conceded 16 goals, which is a lot for these teams. So I think like the players are not at their best in their own clubs, and then this kind of is transmitted into the national team somehow, and they're not playing at their very best. But I think the main problem is that we don't have world-class centre-backs right now in Spain, as we had Sergio Ramos and Piqué before. They were at their best. Now, Ramos is certainly one of the best, but he isn't as good as a few years ago, and he doesn't have this somebody next to him who gives him more confidence. So I think there's a clear relation between the clubs and the national team.
Yeah, maybe what Luis Enrique is partly doing, he did mention Iñigo Martinez at the end of the previous international break, saying, well, if he carries on playing well for his club, he will be in his thoughts and on that list for the next squad announcement. Indeed, in he came. And maybe he's just trying to find that successor to Piqué. He's got maybe a couple of options. Nacho's one, Iñigo Martinez is another, but maybe he's just trying to find that long-term successor. But moving sort of forward in the team, well, here's a positive. Spain did show their fighting qualities in this game, didn't they? They twice scored to get back level, and all of this away from home as well. Now, we mentioned Dani Ceballos a bit earlier on. That first equaliser for me, but sublime play. Iago Aspas and Isco all involved as well. But Paco, what's your sort of general overall assessment of Spain's attacking options right now?
Well, I like the names, I like the players, and I like how young and exciting they all are. In fact, I see the offense as the one single redeeming quality of this inconsistent Spain, should we say, under Luis Enrique, because 17 goals scored in 6 games is quite an impressive stat. That's almost 3 goals per game, and it should be enough most of the time to take on most teams on the international scene. But again, there's nothing good to come out of this if the team doesn't learn just how to defend properly. That's the main problem nowadays. Not attacking, but learning how to defend properly.
I suppose the good thing is that they will always create chances. When you've got those creative players, when they're on form, we have to say, Isco, Marco Asensio, who haven't been recently and haven't been getting the minutes that maybe they were used to last season, it means that you are still going to create opportunities. You're going to maybe get penalties, which means that maybe we should expect Sergio Ramos to be one of the top scorers for Spain going forward, because now he's assumed the mantle as their penalty taker, as well as he has with Real Madrid. Roman, what are your thoughts on that? Are you happy with Ramos taking the spot kick from 12 yards out?
Well, to be honest, when I saw him grab the ball and go towards his penalty spot, I was like, oh no, not Ramos again. But he's scoring the penalties, so I can't really complain. You'd think there might be another player who's capable of doing that, maybe a striker or a midfielder, but it's Ramos. He's the captain. He's got confidence and he's scoring, so I can't really say anything about that, and we have to accept it, and he's doing good.
I guess one of the things is, though, When you take a penalty, sometimes you just want him to take a straightforward penalty, not to, you know, Panenka it down the middle, not to sort of clip it to the left, but actually maybe put his foot through it and maybe take a strong penalty. Because, you know, if you think of the great penalty takers down the years, one of the things that they could do is, with power as well as accuracy, put it in a place that the keeper couldn't reach. Maybe that's just not his style. Maybe he is the man who will just sort of finesse it into the corners of the goal and try and sort of outwit the goalkeeper. Let's just have a look at some of the reaction to this game. Well, Luis Enrique himself said that it was an undeserved result, that football hadn't been fair. There was also an immediate defence of David De Gea, with the head coach claiming that, well, he can't make a mistake if the ball doesn't get to his goal in any case. So the inference there really is that others perhaps let him down. And in fact, Saul echoed that by saying that if De Gea concedes goals, it's the whole team's fault. And also, Lucho said his priority was the Euros, the regular European qualifying tournament, to get through to the next major tournament rather than reaching this Final Four tournament next summer. But, and I found this interesting, I don't know what your read on this is, Bakor, but he said they could maybe do something a little bit more on the psychological side of their game. What do you think about that? Is there a weakness there?
I actually agree with Luis Enrique on this one, because I think that that psychological weakness of the team was pretty obvious against England and Croatia in two very different scenarios. They got thrashed in the opening minutes against England, okay? And they were overwhelmed at the last few minutes of the game against Croatia. It seems to me that youth is some sort of double-edged sword for this team. New blood is very useful when the atmosphere is positive, but when things turn south, this team seems, I don't know, lost. And without those two or three experienced veteran players they used to have in the past, I'm talking about Gerard Piqué, Silva, Cesc Fabregas, Torres, Villa, obviously Iniesta, who is going to be very tough to replace. And I also understand Lucho trying to downplay in some way the Nations League. But we must admit it's indeed a failure through and through. Spain should have done much better in these games.
It is a time of transition, isn't it? I think we still have to admit that, especially after the nightmare of the World Cup, what happened there with Lopetegui and Hierro, and now the sort of new era under Luis Enrique. And of course, it's going to take time. It's simply going to take time for this team to really bed in. And you're right to mention those names, because, you know, Spain has been spoiled for the last 10 years to have the players of this particular quality, and they are leaders. And I think this is something that we've mentioned before with certain teams, you know, like, for example, Valencia in La Liga, or maybe Real Madrid, that they haven't had leaders showing them the way forward. Well, maybe Spain needs to discover some new leaders soon. In terms of the Final Four, by the way, anyone who's interested generally in European football, I think I'm right in saying it's England, Portugal, Switzerland and the Netherlands. I think they're in the Final Four that will play off in this sort of little summer tournament. There's no added qualification, no added benefit. You don't get through to Euro 2020. You just lift a cup. And that's fair enough. But in any case, Spain didn't get relegated, but they didn't go through to the Final Four because they finished second in their group. So then a few days later, the second game of the international break for La Roja, and that was the 1-0 friendly win over Bosnia, and playing at the Estadio Gran Canaria in Las Palmas, first time for a while. Again, let's just have a little look at the starting 11 for this one. And Paco, I'll go to you once I've named it. So Kepa in goal, and you mentioned is sort of maybe the message behind that. Johnny Otto, who ended up getting injured, unfortunately. Mario Hermoso making his debut. Diego Llorente, Jose Gaya with the back four. Then Marco Asensio, Rodri, Dani Ceballos again in midfield. Suso and Isco are supporting Alvaro Morata up front. So much change side. 9 changes from the team who'd started in Zagreb against Croatia. Only Dani Ceballos and Isco keeping their places. So what were your thoughts on that, Paco?
Well, regarding Ceballos and Isco, they were the only ones to play again. And in fact, they were two of the biggest disappointments, in my opinion. I seriously think something is off with Isco. I really can't give his season even a pass. I believe he's slow. He's also thinking slowly, which is weird. And both items are a product of both physical and also, I would say, psychological slumps. I don't know what's really going on with Isco this season. I don't know if it's a confidence issue. I don't know if it's related to the whole Lopetegui affair in Real Madrid. I don't know if he's going to improve under Solari. It's one of the weirdest issues this season in Real Madrid. I didn't like Ceballos either, or Asensio. He seemed lost in the pitch. I did like Bryce Mendez in the last few minutes, and I believe Pablo Fornals was absolutely magnificent, and Rodri also did quite well. So most midfielders were pretty good, but most of the team was, I don't know, I wouldn't say the word mediocre, but I think that there was obviously no motivation going on as a few days earlier against Croatia.
Okay, we'll come back to Bryce Mendez because I want to ask you a little bit more about him in just a moment. But there were a number of players, as you say, who are going through a sort of funny spell. I mean, with Isco, I think it's particularly confusing because the moment that Julen Lopetegui got that job, knowing how important he sees Isco for Spain, you would have thought, right, well, he's going to name him in every single starting 11. I'm going to put my mortgage on it. Isco every single time. And yet that never transpired. So, yeah, you're right. It's a really confusing one. Admittedly, there was one other player who really struggled, and that was Alvaro Morata, because when Spain started to create chances in the second half, he just missed them. There was a free header, there was a shot over the bar, and then there was that really clear chance, wasn't there, with Asensio managing to shoot, and that shot was parried by the goalkeeper, and Morata was there at close range, and he just simply couldn't sort of keep it in goal. He couldn't actually divert it towards goal. He only bundled it wide. So, Roman, why has Alvaro Morata struggled so much?
Well, I've always thought that since he left Madrid and went to Chelsea, he's always kind of felt betrayed by Madrid, because he was great at Juventus. He was one of their best players. And then he came back to Madrid. He was really excited. It was his dream to, you know, make things work in the club of his dreams. He wants everything to go okay. But then in the end, they sold him out to Chelsea. And I just think that since he left to Chelsea, he hasn't been his best himself, you know? He hasn't played at his usual level. So his confidence isn't at his peak level right now. And we all know he's also capable of the best and the worst. Some games he's amazing, he's scoring every single shot. And then the next game, like we saw against Bosnia, he's missing the easy chances. So it's a bit unpredictable whether it's a psychological thing or it's just one of those games where he's not at his best.
Yeah, do you know what? It reminds me, just actually you're talking about that, Roman. I don't know if you remember that sort of that famous little sort of shot of Isco and Morata on the bench. This was in Zidane's sort of penultimate season, 2016-17. And they were talking about sort of being on the bench a lot. And of course, they were part of the supposed B team, weren't they? And they were saying, well, you know, yo soy el segundo plato. I'm the second dish. And the other one says, sí, yo soy el postre. I'm dessert. Almost to say, like, we're not the main meal. We're not the whole, you know, reason why people come to see the team play, because we're never on the pitch from the first whistle. And I wonder if it was to do with hunger, because they were desperate to make a mark when they did get in that team. And of course they did, because, you know, they both made hugely important contributions. I remember, I think Morata maybe scored a goal against Valencia to win it. And I think also Isco scored two goals against Sporting, where he completely dominated that game and managed to get the win for Real Madrid. So I wonder whether it's maybe something to do with that particular factor. And Isco was at least involved in the goal, which was scored by Brais Mendes. And in fact, Jose Gaya was crucial in this as well. Surged down the left. Isco then picked it up. He had a shot. It was saved. Brais Mendes followed up. And Brais Mendes, by the way, came on as a substitute to make his debut for Spain. And he clipped the ball past the keeper for 1-0. Let's talk about him, shall we, Paco? I mean, he's on form right now. Four goals in his last four starts for his club, Celta Vigo, and Spain now. What do you like about him?
There's a little cool trivia fact on him. His agent is Juan Sanchez. You might remember him, former Valencia striker back in the day, who played that famous first season Champions League on the 2000 and scored a very famous brace against Leeds United. One of them, obviously, a hand goal. And I think that Bryce has been properly managed and has been able to climb the ladder in a very responsible way. He's very mature for his age, he's quick, he's very resourceful, and also he's very versatile. He can play in many positions and obviously has that scoring quality, being a box-to-box midfielder that Luis Enrique already knew when, remember, he was at Celta and Bryce was an under-18 player. In my opinion, and he's one of this season's biggest names, hands down, and I believe he's the man of the moment, you could say, one of the biggest names right now in La Liga.
Yeah, I think it'd be really interesting to find out how he's handled by Miguel Cardoso, who's the new Celta Vigo head coach. So we'll keep a very close eye on that situation. But clearly, he's in a good moment. He himself said that the manager can call on whichever player at whatever time, speaking of Spain, of course. And ultimately, well, Lucha has a lot of options at his disposal. And actually, speaking about where we are with Spain right now and looking to the future, he said this Spanish team tiene buena pinta. It means, you know, they're looking good, they're shaping up well, they've got good prospects. Give us your sort of health check on the team, Roman. How bright does the future look? Is there such a thing as having too many options, especially in midfield? And does that lead, if so, to a kind of lack of clarity about what Lucha's best starting 11 actually is?
Well, I think Lucho was very clear on when he said that the target was the Euro Cup. So I think he took the Nations League as a kind of a test, you know, to try players in different positions, to try a bit in the midfield, in the defense, attacking. And I'm hoping that from that, he's found something close to his starting 11 for the qualification for the Euro Cup. So I'm pretty happy with how things have gone so far. It's true that defensively we are struggling a bit, and that's one of the main problems Lucho has to solve. But as a whole, I see the team, as we say in Spanish, as a piña. Like, they're very united, you know? They're always giving the 100%. Even when they were, like, behind in many games, they went for the goal. They kept pushing really hard, and they finally found it in many occasions. Bosnia, obviously, is not the best example because it was a friendly game after being defeated by Croatia. But in other games, you know, Spain were always there. And so I'm really, really happy with this attitude. And I think things look pretty good, to be honest, with Lucho.
Yeah, I think the one thing is we do have now a little bit more of an identity. That the manager, the head coach, really has his image reflected in the team. We saw that at Wembley, certainly. And I think that's at least a starting point, because clearly Spain lost that at the World Cup. And at least they have recovered something. And of course, it's a useful dress rehearsal to have, the Nations League, because what does really matter, as you said, is the qualifying for the European Championships and then going through to perform at that major tournament. Okay, well, look, that's it for part one. Thank you guys so far. Plenty to come in part two, though, of this La Liga Lowdown mini pod, including the under-21s finishing the year in style, one draw, one win in their friendly games. Also, the Women's Clásico going the way of Barcelona, and we look ahead to La Liga Match Day 13. That's coming up shortly.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to this La Liga Lowdown mini pod with Radio Sukarnov and broadcast on SiriusXM FC 157 in North America. I'm David Garrido, chatting you through this week's big talking points as far as Spanish football is concerned. Of course, the focus has been on the Spain national team. We've discussed that in detail with Paco Bolita and Román de Arquer. Ultimately, disappointment for La Roja for not reaching the Nations League Final Four, despite having actually won the first two games in their group and then losing the next two. But in terms of them, I think that it's a longer term piece anyway. And for La Rojita, that's Spain's under-21s, well, they've been in pretty good form. Starting off with last Wednesday's game, they beat Denmark's under-21s by 4-1. They actually went behind early on in this game, and then Borja Mayoral scored a hat-trick, 2 goals in the space of 6 minutes in the first half, the other one before the hour, all three clinical finishes. And the third, especially impressive actually, involved in the build-up, just a really neat little turn to relieve pressure and then lay the ball off, and then made the run. He got the return ball. Spain were breaking dangerously, and he just dinked it over the Danish keeper, and that was the fourth goal. Also, if you haven't seen this, look up Jorge Meret's goal, because it's excellent. It's the third goal of the four. And for a centre-back to fire with this kind of technique, a volley through a crowded box, it was very impressive. So that was the third of the four. But on Borja Mayoral, and Paco, I'll come to you on this, because, I mean, first of all, you know, scoring for fun in the Euro qualifying campaign for the under-21s, 8 goals there. Spain topped the group. They got 1-9 out of 10. They were easily the best team in that group. But on Borja, I mean, you've seen him a fair bit, because obviously you go to Ciudad de Valencia, you go to Levante quite a lot. You've seen him, he's on loan. Hasn't started too many games, but what do you think he's got in terms of qualities to succeed in Spanish football?
Well, I think he has quite a few qualities to achieve greatness, but it is true that he's struggling at Levante, even though he has shown, as you said earlier, with the under-21 team, that he's able to score very easily. He has that inside his blood, you could say. I don't really know. Maybe there are a number of reasons to explain why Paco López doesn't start him. It is true that Roger Martí is Levante's main choice as number 9, and he obviously deserves it. Okay, no doubt on that. And also the new tactics used really don't help Borja too much, because Levante are playing with 3 at the back and 5 in the midfield, and there's very little wiggling room for more than one striker on front. Obviously Levante improved, so Paco López isn't going to change his new tactics, but that might be punishing in some way Mayoral. I think that he can make it, and he will score important goals this season with the Granotas, but he's going to have to work very hard to become Paco López's main forward or one of his main choices this season.
I mean, I think that there's no rush, is there? I mean, this guy's young. He's clearly talented. He's, for me, the word that strikes me is classy. I think that, you know, he works very hard, but when he finishes... Okay, this was against a relatively poor Danish side, but nevertheless, when he finishes, it's got this real touch of quality about it. And this could be, you know, as I say, it's a long game here for him, that he just takes his time, and maybe a few more loan spells. We've seen it before. I mean, Morata, we were talking about before with Roman going to Juventus, etc. And I think this is just part of his education. And sometimes I think we expect, you know, especially with players getting ever younger and reaching elite football ever younger, that we expect them to achieve everything before they're 25. It doesn't always happen that way, and maybe it's just a case of being patient as far as Borja Mayoral is concerned. We'll keep a very close eye on his progress at Levante. And then we had a game on Monday night in Caen in France, where La Rojita travelled to face their under-21s. It was a 1-1 draw in the end. It was a penalty from Mikel Oyarzabal that gave Spain the lead. Alfonso Pedraza was fouled in the 18-yard box, and then Carlos Soler, he had an effort that hit the bar from outside the area. The French came back in the second half. They were a bit more competitive, perhaps feeling the pressure of being at home, and they did get their equaliser, Mateta managing to escape Jorge Mere and beating Unai Simon, a player who recently obviously has fallen a bit down the pecking order at Athletic, with Iago Herrerín coming back in. A shame really for Spain, because actually, other than that, for Luis de la Fuente side, they've been relatively solid defensively and look quite comfortable, especially the centre-backs. Let's just sort of pick out a few more players here, because the ones that either play abroad or in Segunda División might not be familiar to everyone. So Sergio Valencia, who is currently at Bordeaux on loan from Barcelona, playing at right-back. Angelinho, who is now at PSV Eindhoven in the Eredivisie in the Netherlands, having come through the City football group clubs like Man City, New York City, Girona as well, a few loan spells, but then finally got a permanent move to PSV. He was playing at left back. And also Jorge Sainz from Tenerife, playing in holding midfield, but he's also a sort of a centre back, so he can play in a number of different positions. He's quite versatile. So and interesting, actually, you know, the ones that we've picked out there, Angelinho and Sergio Valencia, that they're fullbacks, and we know how important that role is in a team, especially when it comes to a Spanish team playing in a very typically Spanish way, and especially a Barcelona team playing in a Barcelona way. We know how Pep Guardiola uses his fullbacks, and he's done so throughout his managerial career, whether it be at Barca or at Bayern Munich or now at Manchester City. Again, lots of talents there to keep tabs on, and we'll do our best to do so. But let's just change tack now, having discussed the under-21s, because there was a really important game in women's football at the weekend. And of course, the top division women's football in Spain is La Liga Iberdrola, and it was the Clásico. And the Clásico in women's football is not Barca against Real Madrid, it's Barcelona against Atletico Madrid. And Barca ended up winning this by 2-1, all the goals in the second half. So Atletico taking the lead away from home, Kenty Robles with a header from across from the right. But honestly, look this one up if you haven't already seen it. Barcelona's equaliser through Aitana Bonmatí. So the Atletico keeper gives the ball away, trying to play it out from the back, and then immediately sort of apologises and then stays still. And at this point, Aitana's latched onto the ball and she's still quite wide. It's a really acute angle, but she hits the lob absolutely perfectly. One bounce, back of the net. It was a stunning strike. Honestly, you know, if Lionel Messi had done it, we'd be talking about it. But no, it's Aitana Bonmatí who's done it, and we should be talking about it. And then on comes super sub Tony Duggan, who has been really sort of actually performing when she's come on to the pitch as a substitute. Formerly Manchester City, England striker, of course, as well. And snuck into the far post to slot home the winner. Second minute of 4 added on. So 2-1 to Barcelona. Their first win in 4 years over Atletico. In fact, the last time that they did beat Atletico, they went on to win the title itself. So maybe that's a good omen. Paco, just give us a little bit of background in terms of the women's game in Spain. How much is it growing? Is is it making the back page? Is it making TV shows? Is it getting that airtime? And also this rivalry, this Clásico rivalry, how much can it help it grow?
Well, obviously its growth can be perceived and seen live every single weekend. And actually there's a fun bit regarding what happened this weekend. There was controversy because one politician tweeted and referred to a top division game as youth football. And there was huge backlash by players, by coaches, slamming this politician, his name is Íñigo Errejón, for confusing youth football with top division professional women football. But leaving this aside, women football has been subject of a huge revolution in the last few years thanks to a few key individuals. I would like to name his Valencian, Pedro Malavia is his name. He was one of the guys responsible for Valencia's first season in women football back in 2008, 10 years ago. He then went on to become La Liga's top official for women football and has even worked at FIFA in a top position. So his growth has been more or less parallel with Valencia's growth from one team who fused with another one back in 2008 to one of the biggest teams nowadays in Liga Iberdrola, which is the name of the competition. And regarding this new rivalry, Barça and Atletico, they're obviously the current top dogs, and their games are actually amazing, as you told our listeners a few minutes ago. But we shouldn't forget Levante, who have quite the story behind. They dominated back in the 90s with an all-star squad, and they have made this summer an amazing effort with huge signings. Ruth García, for example, one of the top players for Barça, she's a center back. She signed for Levante. She came back to Levante after many seasons at Barça, and she's one of the captains already. Levante have splurged the cash this summer with the aim of creating a team who might battle toe-to-toe with both Barça and Atletico. So I believe that we are living some sort of golden age in Spanish women football. And I seriously would like people to consider attending any single game in Spain, and they will thoroughly enjoy what they are going to see.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Paco, because I actually went to see Barca take on Levante recently in Barcelona. I actually went there to see Toni Duggan and catch up with her, obviously as a British player playing over in Spain. It was a goalless draw, but it's a really entertaining game. And Levante, especially in the first half, really technically very impressive. Lots of quite diminutive players, but they were running rings around Barcelona. But Barca had some useful players. Andres Alves, who plays sort of on the left of the three, in a sort of 4-2-3-1. So there were a number of good players. Of course, we mentioned Aitana Bonmatí, a young player who's really starting to grow into the game, grow into herself, you know, becoming a woman and really sort of expressing herself out there on the football pitch and rightly attracting all sorts of positive coverage and positive headlines. Roman, how strong is this Barça Femení team? Because, I mean, they're not just contenders for La Liga itself, but also the Champions League, the Women's Champions League, where they've got through to the quarterfinals to be played next year. And they're in the sort of easier sort of half of the draw. So they've got real chances of getting through to the final as well.
Yeah, I think Barca are also investing a lot of money and a lot of hope in the women's team. And there's lots of good players coming out, whether they're signings or whether they're local girls here from Barcelona. And for example, I'd like to point out a really good player who is Alexia Putellas. She's young. She's only started four games out of eight in the league, but she's already the top goal scorer with 5 goals. And in the game against Atletico de Madrid the other day, she was key in assisting Hamraoui, who then assisted Toni Duggan with a great pass. And she's really technical, really smart. So she's going to certainly be one of those key players in the future. Well, she's being key now, but she will be even more important in the future. Then, of course, as you mentioned, Aitana Bonmatí. This girl looks really good. The goal was impressive. It was a wonder goal. And I'm sure we'll be seeing much more of her in the near future. And then they had a signing from Olympique de Lyon this summer, which is Keira Hamraoui, which I mentioned just before. She's also doing really good. So, I mean, the Barca women's team have lots of good players and they're going to keep growing. So I think the Champions League is something we're going to look towards very soon.
Yeah, Hamraoui is a really interesting player, actually. I noticed in that game against Levante, she... First half, she sort of wasn't really in the game, but then she just really stepped into it. She's got this real elegance about her. Very tall, she's got sort of blonde, sort of frizzy hair. You can see her a mile off because, you know, she looks obviously very different to a number of players around her. But she had that class and that composure, and you're right, for the assist for Tony Duggan's goal. And she celebrated it as if she'd scored it. Both players, in fact, sliding on their knees. And, you know, what a moment that was for Barcelona at home. And, of course, what it means is that Barcelona are 1 point behind Atletico in La Liga Iberdrola. As it happens, Atletico 1 point behind Barcelona in La Liga. So it's time to look ahead to match day 13, and that is the game itself that we're going to focus on in a moment. But let's just go through the whole list of fixtures for match day 13. So we start off on Friday night, Abu Dharke, Leganés against Alavés. So Mauricio Pellegrino welcoming back his former side as they come to Abu Dharke. Then on Saturday lunchtime, Real Madrid visits Ipurua to take on Eibar. Then we head to Mestalla for Valencia against Rayo Vallecano. Let's see if Valencia can keep up their recent run of form, having won at Getafe last time out before the break. Then we go to El Alcoraz for Huesca against Levante. Huesca, of course, just trying to get a little bit more feeling in their play under Francisco. And it seems like actually that the 5-4-1 that they're now employing is working a little bit more solid than what was going on before under Leo Franco. And then we've got that absolute showpiece game at the Wanda Metropolitano between Atletico Madrid and Barcelona. It's an 8:45 kickoff Spanish time. Then on Sunday, we had the San Mamés for Athletic Club versus Getafe. Interesting times there for Toto Berizzo. So needs to start making an impact and sharpish too. Then at the Ramon Sánchez Pizjuán at Sevilla against Real Valladolid, we go to from there to Catalunya for, in fact, a Catalan derby between Espanyol and Girona, and then the final game on Sunday. Again, pressure on the home side here and the home head coach, because Villarreal are taking on Real Betis with Javi Calleja having to say before the international break, if they're going to get rid of me, they're going to get rid of me. Seems like actually for the moment he seems to have a vote of confidence from the board of directors, but how long will that last? The Monday night game is at Anoeta. Real Sociedad taking on Celta Vigo, who of course now have Miguel Cardoso in charge after the club parted company with Tony Mohamed. So that's the full list for match day 13 in La Liga. But let's focus on that game at the Wanda. As I mentioned, Atleti 1 point behind Barca. They're third. Barcelona are top of the table. Paco, in terms of just, I suppose, rough context for this game, when you think about the clubs respectively and their expectations for this 2018-19 season, how do you think they're doing compared to what they were hoping to do?
Well, I think that both are doing exactly what they were expected to do. It is true that the ups and downs this season have been greater than, for example, last year, and both Barca and Atleti lack the consistency they had last season, for example. But there's no doubt that this is a clash of titans, choque de trenes, as we often say here. Opposite styles, opposite managers, but many similar qualities regarding ambition and drive to win. Barca are where they are supposed to be, top of the league, Atleti only 1 point behind. So I believe that both of them have ambition and drive to win, as I said earlier, as their main motivations. And, well, Messi, obviously, but that's a completely different matter. I don't know what will happen at the game, but I think that both of them will see how most of the international players come back from their games. But if they are top level, it will be one hell of a game.
Yeah, let's hope so. I mean, and especially there's been some interesting comments, hasn't there, from Antoine Griezmann about, you know, whether the fact that he might have been in the shadow of Leo Messi affected his decision not to go to Barcelona and instead stay at Atletico. And he kind of went, yeah, sort of. But let's hope that they both perform to their absolute top level, because then we'll get a belter of a game. But Roman, if you're Diego Simeone, what approach do you take? Because admittedly, he's had rotten luck when it's come to injuries. Pretty much the whole back four have been out. So Savic, Godin, Jimenez, Lucas Hernandez, they've been playing midfielders in that back line. And just, you know, the fact that they are, as I say, in that top three, top four, 1 point behind Barca with the injuries they've had, that is some achievement. But how does he approach this game with all of that going on?
Well, it's going to be really tough for Simeone because he's got many injuries, as you just mentioned. We don't know if Lucas Hernandez is going to get there on time, if Jimenez is going to get there on time. So, I mean, they can't really do anything else apart from play how they know, you know. They have to defend well, be solid, counterattack. Those are the main key points in Atletico's style of play, and I don't think he's going to change anything. So he just has to find maybe younger talents or maybe try a few things around. Montero could be playing. Lucas Hernandez will probably make it from the last reports I've been reading, but of course, you never know 100%. But I think he'll risk with Lucas, maybe Jimenez, who's already like running in the pitch. But Montero is a big possibility. But I don't think there's going to be any random weird thing. Simeone always sticks to his plan, and he's going to just motivate his players 100%, and they're all going to like bite from minute 1 to minute 90, and they're going to want to win whether they're playing with younger guys or the veterans are playing.
Yeah, the unity is absolutely key for a Simeone side. We know this, and it's one of those games maybe that if Lucas Hernandez is 70% fit, you'd probably risk him. Jimenez has been a revelation this season. He's been excellent. And of course, behind them, well, you've got the wall of all walls, haven't you? Jan Oblak. And there's a lot of talk about his contract renewal and whether that's going to happen soon. And you'd imagine that that's perhaps, along with Griezmann in the summer and Simeone to come, that if you get those three nailed down, then you know, Atletico have got a really good baseline for the future. But of course, you know, they've got options now in midfield and some interesting choices here for Simeone, Paco. I mean, I'll come to you on this one. You know, he could play four pivotes, if you like. I mean, there's a possibility here. If he really wants to shut up shop, Saúl, Koke, Rodri, Tomás. I mean, can they all start? Is that the right approach for this game?
I don't really think that the Cholo Simeone will change much regarding his usual tactics. I think Gavi's absence this year was going to be very tough to replace, but Rodri's season is proving every naysayer absolutely wrong, because that kid is amazing. He plays incredibly well, and I can't believe how focused he is every single game under very harsh condition, because Atleti is one of the top teams in Europe, and it's very demanding for any player to be at their top of their game, but he consistently delivers in one of the most demanding midfields in Europe. So Saúl, Koke and Rodri are one of the best midfields in the league, and sometimes I would enjoy that Simeone allowed them to be more, let's say, free inside the pitch, less binded by the tactics and keener to play quality football, because they are very talented, instead of working that hard and running around for 90 minutes and pressuring Barca. But again, maybe if they did that, Atleti wouldn't be Atleti, so there goes that.
Yeah, I mean, Tomás, for me, especially in that game against Athletic Club before the break, I mean, he was just phenomenal. And then you've got, you know, the wide option. So is he going to go for a wide option? Correa obviously is one. Lamar is back in the... You've got Mitolo as well. I mean, you know, you've got so many there. But I guess with Simeone, it's always the question of, is he going to take that risk? And you just feel this game at home to Barcelona, maybe it's not the game to do that, unless it's on a defender he really needs. But maybe in the midfield, he'll surely things up. Let's switch to Barcelona then, Roman. Of course, Ivan Rakitic is banned, so he needs to be replaced in that starting 11. So Sergio Busquets, we will expect, will start. But then who do you put alongside him? We've seen Artur come, you know, obviously to the fore this season. We've seen Malcolm feature as well. Obviously, you've got Coutinho, who's had an injury recently. So how would you line up? What sort of formation do you think that Ernesto Valverde will go for?
Well, I think in this case, it makes sense to play with a 4-3-3, especially taking into account Atletico's problems at the back. So I think the more offensive lineup could be the right choice in this case. And to join Busquets in the midfield, I think I'd go with Artur, of course, because he's been one of the revelations for Barca at the moment, and he's really playing at a high level. So I think he's important there with Busquets. And with Artur and Busquets, I'd maybe add, personal opinion, it won't happen for sure. I'd like to see Denis Suarez, but it's not going to happen, of course. I think he deserves more minutes, but unfortunately Valverde doesn't see in him what others do. So maybe I think Rafinha could be one of the other choices, because he's been delivering when Valverde has brought him into play, and he's been very reliable. Or if not, maybe even Sergi Roberto in the midfield, and put Semedo as a right back, because he's also been playing good games and delivering. So I think it's going to be between Rafinha and Sergio Roberto, probably. But we'll see, because he has many, many choices to pick between.
Let's talk about a player who's admittedly a bit of an enigma at the moment. It went AWOL recently. No one could get a hold of him. Claimed that he had gastroenteritis. He hasn't been punctual. He's complained about the driver that he was given by the club, supposedly eating junk food. Maybe that's why he had gastroenteritis. I don't know. And more besides. Paco, how do you solve a problem like Dembele?
That's maybe the toughest question of the show, right?
Yeah,
totally not fair. Totally not fair. Well, this whole matter is a total mess. And the one to blame is the player himself. It's pretty easy to explain it. He might be very young and blah, 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 but he must be professional. That's a given. And if he's unable to do that, he isn't fit for a team such as Barca. His teammates are actually having his back and are supporting him. Gerard Piqué spoke publicly the other day and said he needs help. And Luis Suarez prompted him to watch how older and more experienced players behave. But at the end of the day, it depends only and exclusively on Dembélé. If he really wants to become a world-class player, he needs to be professional. And if not, well, he can already see the door at the end of the corridor.
It's interesting, actually, when you look at how the players treat him on the pitch. Because remember when he scored that absolute worldie in the Supercopa? You know, that bullet, that absolute, you know, rocket of a shot. And it was mobbed by the players, mobbed by Messi, mobbed by the rest of them. And then I think, I'm going to get this right, I think it was Valladolid, wasn't it, where he scored the winner there on the really ropey pitch. And it was like he was celebrating pretty much on his own. And I wonder whether, you know, the dynamic has sort of changed behind the scenes. But whatever it is that's wrong, it needs to be addressed ASAP. Finally, to you both on this game, where will it be won and lost? What do we think?
Well, I think, as we talked about before, I think it's mainly in Cholo's and Atletico's defense. I think if Lucas and Jimenez are there with Felipe and Arias or Juanfran, then I think they're going to be fine. But if Montero has to play, if he has to put Thomas at the back or make some weird change or lacking some important player, I think Barca will have the clear advantage. So I think Atletico's defense in this game will be crucial.
In my case, I think that accuracy in front is obviously one of the main points here. Well, I think we should always talk about Messi as a separate matter from the rest. If Messi has his day, we can close shop and go to have a walk on the park because he's going to dominate and brutalize Atletico de Madrid. And yes, the word is brutalized because he's able to do that. He's the only player in the world able to brutalize any single team he wants when he wants. But leaving Messi aside, I think Atletico has a chance. If they are accurate in front and they have pinpoint accuracy, I think that they can do real damage to Barca's defense because they have allowed quite a lot of goals this season. But again, Barca, for example, Luis Suarez is in form this year, so he is able to properly replace Messi's goals when he was absent. So I think the team that is able to make the most of their chances is going to win, hands down.
Do you know what I'd do? If I was Diego Simeone and you're thinking, do you know what? I might be in a situation here where we're 1-0 down at home. I need to bring on someone to get a goal. I'd put Diego Godin on the bench and I'd bring him on and put him up front because clearly that works. We saw that against Athletic Club. And, you know, that man with the amount of desire that he has, you know, even if he's got two broken legs and he's got one arm falling off, I'm sure that he would still turn up, put a shirt on, sit on the bench and you know, report for duty, as it were. But maybe Diego Simeone might have different ideas on that one. Guys, let's just quickly, if there's any other games in Matchday 13 that maybe jump off the page worth giving a brief mentioned to Roman, any ones that really sort of catch your eye?
Well, as a fellow Catalan, I have to go with my Espanyol Girona here in Catalonia.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it looks like a pretty interesting game because obviously Espanyol are incredible, hard to believe, but they're at the top near Barcelona, near Sevilla, near all the big teams. And then Girona lately are on a pretty good streak. They're doing good, they're playing well, so I think it's going to be a very interesting game. And also there's a bit of, as we say here, a pique, you know, controversy between both teams because Girona fans usually support more Barca and so Espanyol don't really like that. So that can be a bit interesting, you know, towards the game.
Yeah, and I think Espanyol is key for them, especially having lost at Sevilla last time out, that they need to kind of reassert themselves, don't they? They don't want to think, right, well, they're through the baton, they're through the sort of international break, and then they start fading and people start forgetting about them. They need to just show people they really are up for this fight. They've had a fantastic season so far with, if anything, maybe a tiny bit poorer squad than they had last season. And you know, they need to keep maintaining that. What about you, Paco? What do you think? Any other games that really jump off the page?
Obviously, another crucial game for Valencia at home against Rayo, because every single Valencia game is crucial this season in La Liga, because they have to play catch-up after such an appalling start of year. And they're going to do so, I believe, till the last match day. They are so, so behind. And I would also tell fans to keep an eye on Villarreal. They play home against a very informed Real Betis, and who knows what will happen with Javi Calleja, regardless of what he said before the break. If they lose again in front of their crowd, I believe it's curtains for him.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And especially Betis, buoyed by that win over Barcelona at the Camp Nou in that mad seven-goal thriller. If they can keep up the momentum there, then Villarreal really do have a job on their hands. I'm fascinated by... I want to see what Miguel Cardoso is about. So, you know, this first game in charge of Celta Vigo, away to Real Sociedad at Anoeta on a Monday night. It's probably going to be raining. He likes a 4-2-3-1. That's his preferred formation. It'll be interesting to see what he does with Iago Aspas and Maxi Gomez, whether he keeps that as a partnership that are quite close, or does he sort of drop Iago Aspas a little bit deeper in the pitch? What's he do with Brais Mendes? How does that affect some of the other players? Because there is talent there. Clearly, there's lots of talent at Celta Vigo. It's just that Tony Mohamed didn't quite know the best way to harness it. So that's the one that actually, for me, just strikes me. And I reckon that could be quite an interesting game. Right. Well, guys, that is pretty much a wrap. And before we go, just a few reminders, as always, for where to find us on other platforms. Don't forget our Twitter feed. We're growing all the time. We're at La Liga Lowdown. All the squad are involved in updating that Twitter feed every single day, hour by hour. Our YouTube channel, youtube.com/C/La Liga Lowdown. Both of the gents on this podcast have been involved in stadium sit-downs recently. Roman outside the Camp Nou, and of course Paco outside Mestalla, so do check that series out particularly. Our website for all of our content in one place, www.laligalowdown.com. And of course, as far as this podcast is concerned, whether you're listening on Apple or Android or whichever way, do give us a rating, preferably 5 stars. That really does make a difference. And my thanks to Paco Polit.
You're welcome, David. See you next time.
And my thanks to Roman Derker as well.
It's been a pleasure once again. See you soon.
I'm David Greeno. That is your La Liga Lowdown. See you next time.
This was a Radio Staccato production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.